Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy. It is another week of American Tennis. And folks, there's just so much happening this summer. We're getting ready for the U.S. Open in a month or two, and I've been to some of the junior events, and we've got lots going on in tennis, but one of the things that really, really keeps popping its head up is what's going on with collegiate tennis. But I wanted to say, first of all, just a few of the intro things here. Thanks to J.P. Weber for picking up the American Tennis program, as well as Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces, and also John Denise's Florida Connection program. And thanks, Lisa and John, for all that you do and for your programs as well. We always say on American Tennis, though, that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good people, good men, good people, good anyone to do nothing. And folks, I'm very upset at this point with the direction of American tennis. As you know, most of you are out there as well. How long has it been? If it wasn't for Andy Roddick winning in 2002. It's been 25 years probably since we've had a Grand Slam champion on the men's side. That's 25 years is 100 tries. And then on the women's side, if it wasn't for Serena, it's been about 25 years. I guess Venus won a couple of Wimbledons in there in the early 2000s, and I can't remember the last time. But without Venus and Serena, golly, it's been 25 years on the women's side. But everyone knows in professional ranks we're underachieving, and we're hoping like heck. We're hoping like heck that this new crop of newly professionals that were junior players that turned professional, golly, that the Francis Tiafoes and the Taylor Fritzes and the Tommy Pauls and the, the Stefan, what's Stefan's last name, coach? Anyhow, there's a whole bunch of young up-and-coming pros. And my favorite in the American ranks is Steven Johnson, because I saw him come up through the collegiate ranks, and golly, he just is really, really continues to improve. He learned how to be a winner in collegiate tennis. He really did. And he actually, his last 2 years, he went through the college program and did not lose a match and won 2 NCAA titles. Helped his team at Southern Cal win 2 or 3 in a row. And really, he's my favorite out there. John Isner, how could you not like John? But they're basically the only two younger college-ranked players that have come up through the collegiate system. And it's not good. I'm hoping that one of those guys or one of those young juniors that turn professionals can come up through the ranks. But I don't know what in the world is going on with the developmental programs in the college. Well, I do know what's going on. I shouldn't say I don't know what's going on. As a lead-in, though, that we're doing a lot of stuff that's not that good and a lot of stuff wrong. And I want to lead in by saying that we all would agree, too. Many of us are upset with USTA tennis. Last week on my show, the three conclusions are USTA, you need to dump the point system. You need to dump no ad scoring, and you need to dump 10-point tiebreakers. That's it. Go back to my show last week, folks, and listen to what I had to say about this. And it was a very emotional time because I had just witnessed the National 12s for 2 rounds. They dumbed down. It wasn't the tournament directors. By the way, you guys who ran that tournament in Charleston, unbelievable how good a job they did in the cluster mess that they had to take care of with the rain and having to make sure with the compass draw that all the matches got played. They did a tremendous job. But the word came up from down in Florida, from the executive office, the all-knowing, all-seeing eye of the USTA, that you must play no ad scoring to get through the rain delays. And what could be worse for our kids? For fairness, number one, to play no ad. And secondly, what could be worse for our kids to have to learn that this is even an option? That isn't even an option. And I don't know why people are not speaking up and standing up and speaking out. Every week I'm saying, stand up, speak out, say what needs to be said. And why don't people? I've got Coach Bill Simpson with me right now. We're going to talk about college in a second. Coach, if you'll bear with me a second, I've got to lead in. But I think we're developing a country of wimps. We really are. I mean, nobody's even stating opinions. Everybody's staying surface at cliches and facts and niceties, and they might discuss opinions, but this is an emotional issue. They really are force-feeding it through, like 141 years, Coach, of tradition. Now, I always ask, I guess we just got smart in the last couple of years. Wow, I'm glad we're so enlightened that 141 years of tradition has been set aside because you guys, the ITA guys, got so smart. Some of you folks on that committee got smart. Well, you know how you got smart. You know why you abbreviated the thing. You got a chance to win now. Some of you guys on that committee who have talent but you don't do the work, you got a chance to win because randomness is more important now than actually the cumulative effect of constructing points, working for what you do, working every day at practice, developing conditioning, mental toughness, and all the things. And you've traded this off for randomness. Traded it off for randomness. And you guys want randomness because you want to be able to win without putting in the work. It's that simple. Now, why don't people speak up? I think our young coaches are a little bit afraid. They're just happy to be in the game. Our old coaches, like me, most of you are just saying, it's not my fight anymore. Let somebody else do it. And you just sort of give up. It's not that important. And some of the best minds of some of these young, older coaches are not being used because you've given up. And that's being wimps. Both of you are being wimps. And then the middle-aged coaches are saying, well, I've got a cush job. Let's ride it out until I am an older coach. Maybe I get my retirement. But everybody's afraid. If you address what you say on American Tennis here, If you address issues and stay professional, issues not people, you can say what you need to say. Well, I'm going to address and call out ITA for being a terrible organization for 35 years and losing 400 clients, 400 more than 450-year clients. Poor leadership and a terrible job done by the ITA. Are they one that lost all these teams? They should have fought the battles that were important to fight instead of the surface battles. The battle for more scholarship aid, the battle for equity, not equality, but equity, equal chance for men and women to both get the same amount of scholarships. Title IX, very good law, very poorly implemented. Also, you should have done something when it comes down to the international situation where now American kid doesn't have a chance to get a scholarship. Good, very good American players. And listen, USTA and ITA, parents are getting smarter. They're figuring out, look, with my son's, if his son's number 5 in the state and can't get a scholarship, my son has no chance because he's 25. He's still a good athlete, so let's go play baseball or something else. So it's really shocking. It's really shocking. So anyhow, we've got Coach Bill Simpson with us today. And Coach Bill Simpson, look, I apologize for that long lead-in, but I needed to set the table anyway and to talk about this. Everyone knows how passionate I am. I just hate dumbing things down. And I think the best intro I could say is, wow, 141 years. Oh, I'm so enlightened now because you took 141 minutes thinking about this one night over a couple beers with a buddy and you figured out no ad scoring. Whoa, this is so enlightening. Whoa, this makes it exciting. Are you kidding me? It's ludicrous. It is ludicrous. I blame the ITA. I blame the USTA for not. Look, USTA, you know what your first job is? It's to protect the heritage and the history of our sport and the integrity of the game. And you're not doing that when you dumb it down. Then it is to take care of the participants, your coaches and players out in America, as the ITA is. And you're not doing this because 90% of the coaches do not want this. The players don't want it. And you're force-feeding us like we are, like we're just dumb. Like we just, hey, oh, wait a minute, we're not enlightened. So anyhow, Coach, that's it. And I've asked Coach on here because, hey, Coach, is it true that on D2, the thing is about D2 programs is that you're playing traditional scoring. Last year we played several D2 programs. You play traditional scoring. You play out the match. You play out the third set. I really, really like how you allow 3 points to be scored in the doubles matches instead of the singles. Coach, I mean, are we losing the integrity there and the depth of the game?
That's good. Right. Thank you so much for having me on here again. It's a pleasure to be here and an honor. Every time I get a chance to sit down and talk with you, I absolutely want to jump on it. Division II right now, as it is, our scoring system is intact, but it is a battle. College tennis lost a big one when Division I changed their scoring, and not for the lack of effort. I was with you at the Citadel when we had meetings and hundreds of coaches come up and try to stop that, but it got pushed through, bullied through, and you know, I think now at the Division II level, luckily there isn't the money, there isn't the attention that Division I has, so it's kind of been overlooked for now. But unfortunately, now you have the coaches that are looking at Division I, and you have the officials that are, officiating Division I matches and Division II matches, and they see how it's going, and now that's where there's a push, there's a very strong push to try to change our scoring system, you know, and it's a battle every time. Every time we get on the court, I don't know how many times, even this season alone, I've had to discuss with coaches about, you know, keeping our scoring system the same just for that match, let alone for you know, the votes that are coming up here in a couple months. So
the rule right now is that you play traditional scoring, 2 out of 3 sets, and you do play pro sets for doubles, but every match counts. So we were able to play your team. We played 9 points.
That's correct. We played eight game pro sets, tiebreaker at 8-all, and for doubles, and it's out of 9 points. So then you'll have 6 singles matches, and that's 2 out of 3 sets, with a tiebreaker at 6-all in each of those sets.
Yeah, I absolutely love that third point counting for doubles, because if you win 2-1 in the doubles, you get the 1 point advantage, just like you would if you won doubles. But what I love is it's really a huge bonus to win that third doubles, because you can have a 3-0 lead going into your singles instead of a 1-0 lead. So it really, as a coach, it pushes you to work on your doubles teams.
That's right. And the hidden bonus with that many people overlook or don't really think about is that emphasis on doubles in Division II is a strength for our American players. Our American players tend to be better doubles players. I don't know if it's because of high school or the tournaments that we play here, but
more hardcore,
that, you know, definitely style of play has something to do with it. So, you know, having those three doubles matches count as 3 points, you know, it wants coaches to look for those doubles players, those guys that can fill both roles. And right now, you know, looking across the board, those you know, American players are definitely fitting into that spot. So
yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. And here's the thing that's really interesting. Coach, you coach both men and women's team, and folks out there listening, most of the time the formula at a D2 program or D3 program, the coach does have to coach both the men and the women's, because just simple finances. So you have the burden of putting matches on for men and women both. And very often coaches will use this as an argument. Well, don't we need an abbreviated format, you know, for this? Could you speak to that? I mean, I'm giving you a little bit of a curveball here.
Right. Well, no, I mean, it's definitely true. Matches do take longer in Division II. And the reason why is because most of our facilities have 6 courts, 6 to 8 courts. Very few have the full 12 or more. So when you have 2 matches playing simultaneously, it does take longer. But, you know, an excuse like that is doesn't merit cheating our players, cheating ourselves as coaches by dumbing down our sport. You know, it's a challenge that we have to deal with, and you know, quite honestly, it's also easier for the players for a bit because they have a bigger break in between singles and doubles, so they are allowed to recover. So just as much of a disadvantage there as an advantage. The most interesting thing I think with having the men's and women's on the same team, it really does add a different dynamic and. You know, it brings teams together in a way that you wouldn't see normally. Most of the times with the 6 courts, you know, usually it's set up 3-3, so you'll have 3 guys, but then you have a much bigger fan base of guys that are waiting to play or have already played are out there really cheering on their guys, and you know, it does bring a bit more camaraderie because you have more guys out there.
Well, I would agree with that, and it's had to be. Because the finance always comes back to money, I guess. So, and what I think a lot of this scoring change, the dumbing down the NOAT, the coaches that went along with it at first are saying, well, it's about money. It's about we can't get on TV. It's the format for TV and all that. And, you know, that's pretty ridiculous, really. They chose the worst possible option. No, here's what it is. There might be some truth there. But I saw some of these coaches I refer to as the pretender coaches, the not the contender, but the pretender coaches who had good talents, many of them on the board, They have good talent, but they don't work hard. Don't work hard enough. They haven't, you know, they basically go, wow, okay, chance to change. Let's go with no ad scoring. And because it's an abbreviation, do you believe that one of the coaches was trying to push through a one ad system? We call it the Bullwinkle system. In other words, when we get to 40-40, you have one chance to have a deuce. You play another point, one chance to have a deuce, then it's sudden death after that. I mean, isn't that ludicrous?
Coach, it just blows my mind that people have the audacity to think that they're smarter than the game of tennis itself and have the, again, the audacity to make these changes to the sacred game that, you know, I've dedicated my life to. And Coach Greasy, obviously, you know, you've done so much for the sport, but you would stop me there and say the sport's done so much for you. And, you know, that's the attitude and that's the mentality that I feel like we've lost. A lot of coaches have lost here. It's just, you know, they feel like they're, like you said, smarter than, you know, 141 years of our history, and I'm at a loss for words why somebody can.
The marketeers, people in the end, I don't know. I don't think that all people are selfish. I think we probably all are self-centered. We probably look at things from our viewpoint, and that's, I think, you know, self-centeredness, pride. What about the seven deadly sins? You can go there if you want to. Maybe we have no defense against some of those worst things, but the audacity, the arrogance, here's what bothers me, Coach. The arrogance which the ITA, their arrogance to push through this no-ad scoring against the will of the coaches. And here's how they did it. They got a few, it's almost like they sat in a back room and had their little plan. They had some of the top coaches bought in. And I don't know what they did to get a few of the top coaches to buy in, but a few of them did. Then a few more did. And when those few top coaches, they got an array, maybe one-third of the men's coaches' size, and say, well, these guys maybe are smart. And again, old coaches don't care. They're getting out of it. Young coaches are just happy to be in the game. Middle-aged coaches said, I better not rock the boat. I'll lose. Maybe I'll get in trouble with my AD or something like that. It's amazing how this works. But when, you know, they said the fish always stinks from the head first. You know, there's a saying like that. You know, the fish smells from the head down. And the fish here smells from the head down big time as they got a few of those players, a few of those coaches involved. And then what happened was then it spread from the divisions. Now, this took about 3 or 4 years because people were kicking and scratching and fighting. And I'm just saying riders like a Colette Lewis up at Zoo Tennis, Livid, she said, we're not going to cover college tennis anymore. Lots of articles written against it. Lots of pushback. My golly, the women, 88% of the women were against it. And we had a 196 petition names signed to a petition that were against no ad scoring from the women's side. 196. And they did it anyway. When the first time they tried to do it, Coach, in 2012, we had over 10,000 signatures on the website about where you go on and vote. A couple of the players up in Michigan started that thing. And then we had a vote. I was at in Sarasota, Florida, or not Sarasota, where Naples, Florida. And I was so excited because we had headed it off. That night, Coach Brian Boland calls me from the University of Virginia. He goes, you won't believe what they did. They did what they wanted to do anyway. They did it anyway, Coach. They went behind closed doors and they did it anyway. And then they presented it a different way. They morphed into a different collaboration. And then the next year they brought in some athletic directors and scared all the coaches. All the athletic directors part. Never in the history of my 36 years coaching as my AD ever said, oh, we really want this format. ADs don't care. They don't care. So this whole thing is a ruse, just a deceit. And yeah, I'm going to call it the lying. The lying, the deceit, the arrogance is beyond belief. And the ITA, I'm calling you out. I'm hoping your new leader is a man of substance and will do the right things. And he's not a tennis guy. So I don't know if he even understands tennis that deeply. Seems a good man, but he said, you know, but the horrible thing is that they now, coach, and they've done it in ITF junior doubles. They pushed Noack through in pro doubles. They now got to push through in college D1. You say that, and then I witnessed it for the rain delays at 12 and unders. In every junior tennis, I had a woman talk to me, a good friend, last week on my show. I said, this lady took her son to a tournament in Charleston, four nights in a hotel, plus food, plus gas, plus everything was $1,200. Her son got to play 49 games total of no ad scoring. It cost $1,200. Now, coach, $1,200 divided by 49 is a little bit over $24 per game. And a coach called me after the show last week and said, well, you want to look at it that way. It's about parents, coaches. It's $4 to $6 a point that she had to pay. Do you want to play a sport where it's $4 to $6 a point that they have to pay? And I don't think we're promoting or growing the game, USTA, by doing this. It's ludicrous. The arrogance is beyond belief. So now I want you to talk a little bit but more about insights about D2 tennis. Let me go to the commercial, and I'm going to come right back. We're going to talk about D2 tennis. This is Coach Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
This Coach Chuck Creasy, and yeah, folks, go to chuckcreasy.net. Camp season is almost over, but you can get my blogs. You can get American Tennis Radio for the fifth year in a row. Also, folks, you can just chime in. Email me at chuck@coachcreasy.com. chuck@coachcreasy.com. I'd love to hear from you. This is Coach Chuck Creasy. Yeah, we're making them in America, and we need college tennis to be the stepping stone to pros, but also big chance for kids to just get better. I got Coach Bill Simpson with me. Coach, give me an overall look at what the differences, the major differences you see in Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, junior college, the five divisions that we have. I mean, what's your perspective after being in both D1 and D2?
You know, I think right off the bat, the biggest thing that you're gonna see is you know, the finance that goes into it, and you know, money for you know, facilities and you know, programs. That's definitely going to be the biggest visible thing that there is. You know, coaches. I think that, believe it or not, in Division II, you've got Division II coaches. In my opinion, you're more transient. You know, you have people that are finishing up their coaching career or just starting out their coaching career. You don't have a whole lot of Division II coaches that are going to be there for the long haul. They're either trying to get in or trying to get out. And I think
stop there. Do we have enough college coaches? Do we have enough people trying? I mean, high school coaches, when I talk to high school coaches, they say the same thing. There's a lot of time people are getting in, getting out, or they're – a football coach was given tennis. Do we not have enough coaches out there?
I think we do. I think we do have enough coaches. I think we maybe have more than enough people who either want to be or think they are, ready for that challenge. And I think that's part of the issue right there with, you know, bringing it back to the scoring system. You know, you have a lot of people that aren't going to be invested into the long haul, and they're going to do what it takes to get by and be successful, to move on to the next level or to move on with what they're doing. So, unfortunately, it's that investment that lack of investment, I would say, into a program, into the players, and that also has to do with internationals. You know, I mean, how many Division II players are transfers and are internationals? If you add both of those together, it's, you know, by far the majority. And you have to think that without those relationships with the coach. I mean, you know, I know there's a couple of teams out there, even in our conference, that, you know, one player will go through three coaches in its college career. And you know, something like that, you know, can really
do they not pay enough? I'm just saying.
That's definitely, I would say that's definitely part of it. You know, I think that you have those that, you know, tennis is a funny sport, and it's a funny industry to be in. You have people moving around all the time. You know, you have the self-promoters who are, you know, they're just trying to make a quick dollar and move on to the next bigger and better thing. And they're going to hop around the country and even around the globe. And, you know, I think that's definitely a lot of those guys land in Division II college coaching for at least a time or two. But yeah, I think you know, obviously salary does play a big part of you know, the longevity of someone's career at a school.
Well, I was talking to a junior development coach earlier this week, and he was debating you know, what should I do with my career, and I say you've got to move the ball forward in one of some areas. In other words, are you moving the ball forward financially? Are you moving the ball forward intellectually? Are you moving the ball forward as far as your developmental, your skills, your skill set, whether it's management or leadership or teaching? Are you moving the ball forward for your family? And I think all of us we ask these questions of ourselves. And in the end, you've got to move the ball forward. And so you're saying financially you don't. Intellectually we do. I think all of us who are in coaching or teaching intellectually do. Until, I throw that in because I just talked to a high school teacher recently. I said, isn't it stimulating? They said, not at all. And one time teaching was stimulating, now we get force-fed by the dictatorial school boards, and whether it's the Common Core or Washington No Child Left Behind programs, or these, the dictatorial regulations that come from top down. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, folks? Okay, that dumbs us down. I would challenge USTA again, and I'm going to keep doing this. You guys would just use your common sense on leadership. What you should tell these people who are running your tournaments, here's the guidelines, you go figure it out. You'll take the hill, we're not going to tell you how. Can you imagine, that's how you lose wars, is by being so strict. Yes, you have to have guidelines, but you got to give people the freedom to make adjustments. If it rains or if you have a problem, work it out. But when decisions are made from Washington, D.C., about our individual lives, our school system, when decisions are made by USDA down there, wherever you are now, like Nova, wherever you are, wherever heck you're building your facility, from there, or whether it's ITA, the ITA just moved to Arizona or something. So if decisions are made for you, I mean, think of how far, don't you feel pretty far removed when the decisions are made for D1 coach, and then it bleeds over to D2, and then somehow it mysteriously becomes a rule?
Absolutely. No, and I think, you know, I'm personally – you know, feeling this right now in my my feelings as a Division II coach, I see the switch. We had a we have a conference rule now that once the match is decided, or the matches automatically, the matches that haven't go to a tiebreaker for the third set, and then the matches that haven't started play an 8-game pro set, no add scoring. And the reason, and you know, the reasons for that, I have no idea. It wasn't discussed. It's just something that was told that we have to do. So now,
the referees come and tell you this stuff. Or?
This was a conference rule, but it's happening in conferences across the country. It's definitely not just ours. It's a part of it, and you know, that's a part of the struggle that. That I'm now dealing with is at the beginning of the match, the first 30 minutes, instead of really working my team hard and getting warmed up and proper, I'm over there debating with another coach trying to get us to play the full match out. And that's a part of what I have to do at the beginning. You know, and it's gonna become an ITA rule. It's inevitable. And that's the feeling that we coaches have, and it's time that we need to step up and say something. But with this style, you know, these are orders passed down, and we don't have a voice. And that's something that
And then the voices are sort of scattered. You need a spokesman. You need somebody, and that's what we did when we created the Men's Division I Tennis Association, MDTA. Now it's pretty much dissolved, but it did its job for 2 or 3 years. We were a voice, and the ITA heard us. The ITA pushed back, And ITA, are you guys really interested in the educational process of tennis at all? Are you at all interested? And where are you taking your marching orders from? You know, this is so ludicrous. Now, I've used, as I said before, I love music. I love music. I can't play any musical instruments. Singing is terrible. However, I love music. I play classical music all the time, and I absolutely love it. So just because I appreciate music doesn't make me a musician or an expert in music. Could you imagine that if I was the director of a music school and people would come in wanting to play classical music, and I'd say, yeah, you know what? This isn't sexy enough. Oh, this isn't quite good. Let's abbreviate it. Let's play jazz. Hip hop, rap. Let's play rap so we can get those people like rap to really buy into what we're doing here. You know, hey, well, let's market rock and roll. Let's market anything. Ludicrous. So I mean, it is just beyond belief how people think that because they have a position, they have expertise in the sport. A lot of positions are promoted through the Peter Principle or the Dilbert Principle. The Dilbert Principle, coach, is when basically they promote somebody with a pay raise to a higher department just to get them out of your own department.
Oh, right.
you can't fire somebody, so you promote them to get them out of your department. So, coach, talk about real quick. I know you got to go here in a few minutes. Just talk about what you're going to have to do to fight off things, and do you have anybody out there that's going to stand up? Do you have a voice? They look at you guys as a sidekick. You're not
you know, there are people out there. There are, you know, I mean, for every one coach that just wants to get the match over with and go along with what's happening right now in college tennis, there's at least another coach out there saying, yeah, I hate this no ad stuff, and let's go ahead and play it out. So there are people out there, and I'm hoping that we can get together. You know, I'm doing it in our conference. I'm trying to every coach that I play, you know, I sit down and we talk about it. Like I said, you know, you gotta hash it out, and there are a group of men and women out there who do want to preserve the integrity of our scoring system and our sport, and it's one of those things we have to come together, and it's something that I think on a conference to conference level it's already happening. I think we just have to find a way to bring the conferences together, to find a way to get those coaches in touch with each other. That's another problem with Division II coaching for sure is the fact that we don't have coach like we had breakfast a couple nights ago or a couple mornings ago, and that was maybe the best breakfast I've had in a year, is because we got to sit down and talk about things as coaches and as men, and that's something that's lacking in our profession. It's everything has become so competitive that we don't want to come together and break bread and figure out how we can preserve the sport. And I think it's coming to a point where people are starting to realize that if we don't get together, it's going to get pushed through the same way it did at the Division I level.
I hope so, Coach, and I hope that you can be part of the catalyst to round people up. And the point is, I don't know, I say people are weak. Maybe, people say my skin's not in that game. They get afraid. I've had very strong men and very good coaches say, hey, look, we're a little afraid of USTA. Is that terrible to hear USTA? Is that terrible? I know you guys. I worked for you for 6 or 7 years in a lot of different ways. And the point is, I served on committees. And I was a national coach for you guys. And I helped win U.S. Open, a lot of tournaments, for you guys. But you guys just not care? I don't think that's it. What would really, really be good, if you would consider bottom-up stimulating people. In other words, encourage coaches to run their own events. Encourage coaches to stand up, speak out. Encourage people to not just be company men. But you need to empower. The key to power is empowering people under you. It's not a show of regulations and through coercion. Coercive leadership is about the worst form you could ever have. And you will have a rebellion. I don't know when it's coming. But your all-knowing, all-seeing stuff is about had enough. Everybody's had enough, right, Coach?
Absolutely.
So, Coach, I really, really appreciate you taking the time, your busy schedule, coming on in today and talking. We'll do it again and try to get that group together in Division II. Otherwise, it won't happen. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. If it squeaks too loud, it gets removed.
That's right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be able to speak with you. And hopefully this gets out there to enough coaches, and I can get guys involved to be able to make a difference. And hopefully.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, Coach, and I'll catch up with you later. I surely appreciate all that you do. Okay. All right, folks. I got a couple more things to run through. That's, again, Coach Bill Simpson at Coker College in Hartsville, South Carolina, a great, great young coach coming up and coming through the ranks and doing so many of the right things. And, yeah, I mean, the saying is, you keep fighting windmills. And you feel like you're fighting these lost causes, and they say sometimes lost causes are the only ones worth fighting. But it's really interesting to me how weak people have become, how disinterested people have become, how appeasing people have become. I mean, it's almost like the old movie, keep going back to Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. We should say medication time, and everybody just sort of lined up, and they played that music, and people fell in line like zombies. It's like the 1984. I think there was an old movie called Metropolitan or something, where people became robotic and zombies. And anytime we do not empower our grassroots, we're going to have problems. Here's where you're at with the USTA. I was on the committee, and again, I served some good time and appreciated being on there. I was removed from that, was not asked to come back. And, I stood up, a squeaky wheel gets the oil, but if it squeaks too loud, it gets removed. I guess I was squeaking too loud, and they were not comfortable with having me on there. It wasn't that I wasn't trying hard. It wasn't that I didn't have enough tennis background. It wasn't that I didn't love the sport enough. But I made some of the people uncomfortable bringing up issues we needed to bring up. So the point is I'm no longer on that committee. But one of the things that I really try to always get pushed forward is that we need so much our grassroots people. We need our tournament directors, and we need entry-level kids to fall in love with and to feel great about doing it. So the question came up one time, we need more tournament directors, and we need more kids playing. And I, as devil's advocate, I maybe shouldn't say, I said, well, at this point with the state of tennis, why would they want to? And I elaborated by saying our volunteers who run tournaments are treated like little pawns in a bigger scheme, and they're disempowered. We have many tournament directors who run tournaments for 20, 30 more years or more, and they basically now have to listen to the marching orders of some suits down there in Florida who say you've got to do this. Oh, by the way, I know your tournament has been operating for 30 years. Oh, I know you, your most popular tournament in the South or the Northeast. Oh, and I know. However, our criteria, by the way, that they used to give pathetically, would give a coach 5 minutes or 10 minutes maximum on a phone conversation to explain. It doesn't fit all of our criteria, not in a hotel. Oh, do you have the red, orange, and green lines on your courts? Oh, you don't fit into our criteria. Oh, do you have this facility? Oh, this restaurant, that restaurant. But we did the courts for 30 years, the tournament director will say. Well, okay, we're not going to take it away from you, but we are going to demote you to an L3. And I know that you were a higher-level tournament, but you're going to be an L3 now, and we'll see if you can take care of getting all of the things done that now we, the all-knowing, all-seeing USTA wants you to do. Now, how long do you think, after all these years of helping, that tournament director is going to say, wow, you know, I'm really on board? No, they'll stay with it, but they resent it. They resent the USTA. And team building 101, you guys would fail miserably at trying to be a coach and trying to get a team to play hard for you. You would fail miserably because you don't understand that power is not implied. It's implied. It does not have to be exhibited. Let me get that right. Again, power, it is something to be implied but not exhibited. Again, top-down management does not work. It does not inspire. So I told those guys, why in the world would you want to be a tournament director? We've got to think in terms of why someone would want to be. To bring honor to your community, to engage the children of your community, I mean, I can think of 15 things that have nothing to do with making money. Now, that's maybe the problem. USTA looks at it like financially, is it solvent? Is it going to promote our agenda further? Call it a tournament an L2, L1, L6, L, you know, whatever, does not inspire kids to want to win that tournament either. Why would kids want to play when there's no college scholarships anymore? Why would kids want to play when for $1,200 for a weekend, your youngster gets to play 49 games at $24.02 or whatever it is per game, or each point costs $4 to $6? Why would they want to play? It's one of the hardest sports there are. There's nothing that breeds camaraderie at the USTA structured tournaments for youngsters. I was very pleased to see at the National Boys 12s, they had a ping pong tournament and they had some things for the parents, but USTA, you can do so much better. Play two rounds of doubles out of the box. Just two rounds of doubles. Parents would get a chance to talk, they'd get through the jitters. You'd have most of the doubles done. You wouldn't have to dumb it down after the first two rounds. You could play the dumb down pro set or the dumb down double A scoring. No. You could just dump the double A scoring. The no ad should never be done. But you could play the pro set, traditional scoring, the first couple rounds. And then parents would get to know each other on the first night or two. Kids would work their way into the tournament. It just takes a little common sense, but you have to know what your objective is. Your objective is to breed unity. You're not doing it. You guys are not being good coaches. You're not being good promoters of the benefits of the sport. Hype and fame and fortune does not inspire. Look, people will die for a cause. They will not die for money or fame. They will die. I mean, cause-driven things are much more powerful. Yes, I fight the ITA. I fight the USTA right now with tooth and nails because I'm cause-driven. I want our children to come up and learn the game of tennis as it was taught for all of our tennis ancestors. I want them to play the same game that Rod Laver got to play, that Margaret Court got to play, that Arthur Ashe got to play, so that that Maureen Connolly got to play. I want our children to grow up and know the heritage of sport. It's not just a flim-flam, showboat, shallow thing that we're trying to do. And you're after the popularity hook and the popularity money and the popularity prize instead of the teaching prize, the prize that really is long-lasting, and that's the love and appreciation, you know, of our game. And it's really, really just quite, quite sad. You know, and we need the work. We've talked about this so much, but if we don't put work as the primary ingredient of our game, we're sunk because talent is God-given. The reps and the opportunity are given by parents, coaches, teachers, or by the USTA, or by the ITA, or by organizations. The work is where the players grow. That is where all the lessons are learned. Their work, and then they achieve, and how they aspire to excellence is through the sweat of their brow. The pride in a person's job, the pride in a person's the skill set they get through hard work, their schooling, whatever it is, whether it's music, sports, or anything that is done through hard work is something that they will never put down. And hard to pick up is also extremely hard to put down. Easy to pick up is extremely easy to put down. We need leadership. We need those individuals who really are teachers and want to help our youngsters at a much different level. Really stick their nose in there in battle for this. But the marketeers, get the heck out of our – or stay on the periphery, and you work with the skill set. Work with the product that we develop with our educators. Don't try to change the product. Don't try to change the product. It really, really is not going to work. So, folks, we every week will be here on Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network. I want to thank Coach J.P. Weber with the We Coach Tennis Program for picking up the network. We really, really appreciate that. And we hope that you are.
Made in America. Never buy tattooed on his tombstone. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Reminding you, you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Coach, I wanted to remind you a couple short announcements here. Again, tune in to Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program that comes to you every week on Tuesday. Her program is now, I think, entering the fifth year. And it's fantastic. And folks, enter also Coach John Denise's Florida Connection program. It is entering also. I think he's entering his second year. Coach J.P. Weber also is, he has his We Coach Tennis program. I'm Coach Chuck Creasy. This is American Tennis, where we remind you that all that it takes for evil prosper is for good people to not stand up. I'm a very, very much a believer in loaded language and for our kids to learn different sayings. And with that, as I do my camps this summer, I remind youngsters of my favorite, and through hard work and how important it is. I tell youngsters that, look, the world promises you buckets of rhinestone, but God gives you the chance to make one diamond with your life. And I tell them, go out and make a diamond with your life. I know that we have a situation now where rhinestones are being propped up. Shallowness is being flaunted. Things are being put up on Facebook. We call it Facebook. I heard that expression very, very recently about Facebook and how we can frame just about anything and try to make it look good. That the diamond takes time and pressure, and it doesn't look like a diamond at first. But a lot of times it looks just like a rock. And in the United States of America, we have built diamonds through hard work. People have made their careers through hard work. Greatness has come through hard work. So remember, the world will promise you buckets of rhinestones and flash, but God gives you a chance to make one diamond with your life. Hard work, perseverance, all those things that tennis teaches you, all those things we love about tennis. Please go out there, touch a child in front of you, by promoting hard work. Hard to pick up will be hard to put down. Easy to pick up, easy to put down. God bless each and every one of you. I'll see you next week on American
Opinions
Tennis.
Stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.